Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm your host, Brent Topp, Chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. We're thrilled once again to have as our guest Brother Ron Barney, retired from the Church History Department for the Church in Salt Lake City, and is the Executive Director of the Mormon History Association and one of the Church's great experts on church history in general, but in particular on the Vanguard Pioneer Company that crossed the plains and established in Salt Lake City. So, Ron, we welcome you again to our discussion of that Vanguard Party.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Ron, in our last episode, we got the pioneers out to the what today would be the border between Nebraska and Wyoming at Scott's Bluff, and we just are ready now to start up onto the High Plains and enter into Wyoming. Why don't we pick up the story right there as we now leave what would be modern-day Nebraska?
Once the saints were reminded of the the call that they really were adhering to, and they knew that they were going to have to do things differently. Coincidentally, they came at what some would maybe say the halfway mark, which ended up being on June the 1st when they first approached Fort Laramie, or as it was called then, Fort John. The name. The nom de plume of Fort Laramie kind of continued on and continues even today. But at that time, there had been some name changes. I wish we had time to talk a little bit about that. But this very significant place in the middle of the plains, as the saints were starting to move toward the mountainous area of the West, there's no way to understate how critical Fort Laramie was to all overlanders. To give an illustration that they really were moving into the upper plains, the elevation of Fort Laramie is about what Salt Lake City is. Hmm. So clearly they had changed into a new climate. One of the things that they spoke of over and over again was the fact that things that looked close were far, far away. They thought they would go out and climb a particular hill. It would take them all day to get there. It was noticeably different atmosphere. The air was different. And numerous of the overlanders commented about that. At Fort Laramie, and we could tell a great story there, I think, about meeting with the factor, as he was called, of Fort Laramie, who kind of became a little bit of a noted character in himself, as he would meet these westbound companies, and he knew the Mormons were coming. The previous year, Lilburn W. Boggs from Missouri had gone through and forewarned him that the Mormons were on their way and he better watch out. Hmm. And it's interesting that that his experience with the Mormons was exactly 180 degrees from what Lilburn Boggs said it was going to be. At any rate, they were welcomed, and it became a very important place. Blacksmithing took place to help repair what was required. Also, when they got there, there were a group of saints from Mississippi who had wintered the previous winter at Fort Pueblo. They had been misinformed about when the Vanguard was going to come to the West. They thought it was going to come in 46. They they ended up disappointed, but they stayed with some of those, the Sikh detachment of the Mormon battalion at Fort Pueblo. So they came up, led by a man named Robert Crow. They had as a guide for them a former mountain man who knew the area very well, and he ended up being a great blessing because as they continued on and met some of these characters who had been in the mountains for two decades, this ended up being an asset for Robert Crow and his group. There were 17 of them then that joined the Vanguard. So now there's 169. Let's see, that isn't right. 165. You do the math. 17 were added to the 148, and they continued on. They just 4 miles past Fort Laramie, Fort John, as we had described before, they had been traveling on the north side of the Platte River, and then when it turned into the North Platte River, they continued that so that they would not be in competition with the other overlanders who were starting to catch up with them. They were starting to have encounters with immigrant groups, interestingly from Missouri, which told some interesting stories. In fact, there was one where there was a Missouri a traveler who was caught in the middle of the river, looked like he was going to drown. The Mormons jumped in, saved his life, and it changed the entire atmosphere. It was a good thing. But when they got 4 miles outside of Fort Laramie, they encountered some bluffs that required they could no longer stay on the north side. So they had to go on the south side on what was this Platte River Road that became the Oregon and the California trails. And beginning at that point then, they start to share the difficulties. They, as I say, they encountered others from the east who were westbound, which presented a very interesting dynamic for the Mormons as they departed Fort Laramie and began about the last half of their trek.
Now we're starting on into some difficult terrain as they get into that Wyoming high prairie. Let's continue on and talk about what happens as we start up that journey even more.
As they moved along westward, and of course they're now in a new atmosphere. They can see mountains. The Laramie Mountains were formidable. There not only is there a Black Hills in South Dakota, but there's also Black Hills in eastern Wyoming. As they began to see a very different landscape to which they, from which they had been accustomed. Interestingly, about this time on the 11th of June. Parley P. Pratt, who had stayed behind, began his westbound journey with about 1,500 people. The fact they had 580 wagons, just imagine this, over 4,300 animals with them, and they were only one of two. Behind him was John Taylor, who was bringing along yet another large immigrant company bound for Salt Lake City. And so this vanguard really became, in many ways, the preparatory group for all of those who followed. Much of what they did on the road, they did with the idea that we're doing this for the people who are coming behind us. This isn't just to get us there. We're doing something for somebody else. This isn't just for us. It's for everybody. When they got to the moved along to where Casper, Wyoming is now on the North Platte, they built a ferry, and it became a very successful ferry. They left a contingent of men there to run this ferry, which ended up being an economic asset to the church because it not only facilitated Mormon immigration, it helped everyone else who was on the trail who were westbound. They moved on, and the third week in June, they started to encounter landmarks that were of great consequence. They had moved from the Platte River as a water supply to assist them on to the Sweetwater River. Mm-hmm. Coming to the Sweetwater, they also encountered Independence Rock. They continued to follow the Sweetwater along. They found so many interesting things. They found an ice spring, for example. They dug down a little bit. They're in the middle of the summer. But they found an ice spring that became very famous on the trail. The nights were cold for them. They would wake up in the morning late into June, early into July, and find ice in their buckets. So this was not all easy, but it was most interesting to them who had never seen such stuff. They finally crossed the Continental Divide at South Pass, and they made note about this. It's barely discernible, but it is such a significant landmark. The difference between water going to the East Coast, primarily through the Missouri River, into the Mississippi, into the Gulf of Mexico, or the water that is running toward the Pacific Rim. And so this was a very important time for them. They began to encounter eastbound travelers. Some of these men who had been in the mountains for two decades, Moses Black Harris, they encountered on the 28th of June, Jim Bridger, mm-hmm. who told them about his fort. And all of this time, they're being fed information about the Great Basin. They run into Sam Brannan, one of their own, on the 30th of June, who gave a very different picture. Where the Great Basin was not the ultimate goal, he wanted them to go all the way to the West Coast. And a great story in itself. Of course, they demurred from such a venture, and but they were becoming more and more informed about what the ultimate location of their journey was. They got to the Green River on the 1st of July. Built a ferry there. But interestingly, about this same time, men began to get sick. They started to refer to this as Rocky Mountain Fever. And by all accounts, even though there were no analyses done at the time, this looks like Rocky Mountain Tick Fever.
Did they have any indication that it was from ticks right at the—
I don't think they knew that.
They were just getting sick and didn't know.
And we've applied the tick idea to it later on because the symptoms tend to mm-hmm. carry on for generations and
wow.
people make the equation. They finally got to Fort Bridger about the first week of July, July 7th. There they find Shoshone Indians camped around Fort Bridger. It's a kind of a little ramshackle place. Mm-hmm. It's not what we envision from the cowboy movies from the 1950s. It was nothing like that at all, but it was a very important way station for them. In that area, they cross the Bear River. They meet Miles Goodyear, the man who had actually lived in the Great Basin, mm-hmm. who had a small fort of his own near Ogden that he called Fort Buenaventura. And Miles Goodyear gave them information that really encouraged them because he was able to grow crops that some of them did not know that they would even have a chance to grow. So they were quite encouraged by Miles Goodyear. Of course, later on, the Mormons purchased Fort Buenaventura. Brigham Young becomes ill himself on the 11th of July, and it kind of changes everything. The entire nature of the expedition changes because the camp divides and Brother Brigham is sick all the way into the valley.
You mentioned that they divided. What do you mean by that, that the Vanguard Pioneer Company divides?
Near the Evanston area, the Evanston, Wyoming area, Brigham Young became quite ill, along with many of the others, so debilitated that he could not travel. So they divided the company. They sent an advance group who served kind of in an exploratory way. They knew that they were going to go down Echo Canyon. Mm-hmm. They did not know at that point how they were going to get into the Great Basin. They knew about the Donner Reeds. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, when some of these eastbound travelers came, they brought tales of the ordeal with the Donner Reed party, including the fact that one of them, a woman named Lavina Murphy, or sometimes called Lavinia Murphy, who Wilford Woodruff had converted to the church, had been a part of that Donner Reed party. So actually, there was a Mormon in the Great Basin in 1846. And sadly, she was one who ended up dying. And there's some controversy around her demise. And she's part of that whole incredible story. So they were getting word about this. But this advance group, Orson Pratt took a major role in it. They divided the party up. Some stayed behind with Brother Brigham to inch him along, while this other group continued on west. They entered into to Echo Canyon. And I should say, in kind of a summary way, that it took them about a week to get over the Rocky Mountains, mm-hmm. into the Great Basin itself. We sometimes don't think about the Wasatch Front being the last lip of the Great Basin, but it is the east rim, mm-hmm. of the Great Basin. And it took them most of a week to get from that Evanston area there into Echo Canyon, their main route of travel, along the Weber River, so they had a water source, up then to finally approach the Salt Lake Valley. One of the things that's interesting about Echo Canyon is the sight of it, the beauty of it, really captured the imagination of many of them, and tales then began to be told that lasted for a couple of generations about the magnificence of this entrance into the Salt Lake Valley. Well, the first group, and we're really abbreviating this, and I'm sorry that we're having to do that, but the first group then gets in, led by Orson Pratt and Erastus Snow, astride one horse. There's two of them riding horseback. They come into the valley on the 22nd of July, and they see things that look very, very promising to them. We celebrate the 24th of July in Utah as the entrance of the Mormons into the area, because that's the day that Brigham Young, mm-hmm. was finally able to come in, lying in Wilford Woodruff's wagon, still ill from this debilitating fever that they have, that some attributed to the elevation. They thought it was an atmospheric kind of a problem, not knowing that it was born from ticks. Well, once they got into the valley, and we even know approximately how they came in. Their first camp once they were into the valley is in Salt Lake City, roughly at about 17th South and 5th East. And there's even a monument built to these pioneers there. They start to inch their way up to the location that we now view as the centerpiece of Salt Lake City, of Temple Square. Now, as they come here, they immediately start to plan on how to stay here. They had tried Weber Canyon, which would have led them to Fort Buenaventura, where Miles Goodyear was. It was too formidable. Even though there had been a wagon company, the Bryant Young Company, who had gone through Weber Canyon the previous year, they realized that going approximately to Hennifer and then up over Hennifer into the East Canyon area, down Emigration Canyon, beat out a path. They used some of the lead from the Donner Reed party the year previously, and then finally found their way into the valley. And once they got here, they began to try to figure out how to stay here. Mm-hmm. They started to plant. They planted potatoes right off the bat. Now, here we're the third week of July. Mm-hmm. It's late in the year. They're quite afraid of what they've encountered. They do not see the wildlife that they once saw. So there was some real concern about how to maintain themselves by way of food, but they were really taken by the area. They thought it was gorgeous. I'm going to read from a diary of Norton Jacob, who was one of the great chroniclers of the trek into Utah. I want to read how he described this almost idyllic setting. At 8 p.m. on the 28th of July, and this is after they had spent most of a week going north and west and south in exploratory kinds of ventures, he wrote, at 8 p.m., the president, Brigham Young, summoned all the camp to attend a council on the spot intended for a temple lot in the forks where the creek of this pure cold spring water spreads into several branches over this delightful plain and is capable of watering a city of 100,000 inhabitants. It was a beautiful and instructing scene, the soft, mild air that always prevails here at night, so that the men sit down comfortably in their shirt sleeves. The full moon shone over the eastern mountain, shedding her mild radiance on the quiet valley of the Utah outlet. This is a very engaging thing, and they're quite optimistic about their time here.
How long do they stay? Because this is a Vanguard company, and they've got thousands waiting to come. So they have to establish, but then head back to help others. How long do they stay in Salt Lake, and what do they do?
Interestingly, that same night, the 28th of July, Brigham Young assembles the group together and poses a question to them. According to Norton Jacob, President Young said, "Shall we look further or make a location upon this spot and lay out and build a city?" There was a question in some people's minds about this. He knew darn good and well where he was going. Mm. I think the way he handled this, about making this a group decision to choose on this, and he posed this as a matter of vote. There was one man who said, "No, I think," and I like the fact that it was such an open forum that somebody could speak up and say, "Why don't we try the other side of the Great Salt Lake?" Well, he hadn't been there.
Yeah.
The rest of the group said, "No, let's stay here. This looks promising." And so as a whole group, they decided to use the Salt Lake Valley. They continued their exploration. They found very intriguing things going out to the Great Salt Lake, harvesting salt. They found hot springs just a little bit north of the city. Their imaginations were really running. But their purpose, again, was not for themselves, but to do something for somebody else. So after they got here, they immediately began to prepare to return. And the return is a very interesting effort. It was composed of four different groups that headed east. First, beginning on the 2nd of August, was an express group.
Can I back up just a second and ask you, did anybody stay behind to kind of stake their claim or whatever? So we're preparing and we know where we're going to settle, and now we've got to go back to get the others. But did anybody stay to
indeed.
Okay.
And we're even – I wish we had time for this. We're getting people from the Mormon Battalion from California who are moving east, who also join the Saints in the late summer. So there's a group that's going to be left here, and you can do the numbers that I'm going to give you here to realize that even some of the Vanguard stay. That first group of the Express that went to so that they could tell the subsequent followers, the subsequent immigrant groups, about what they could expect, left August 2nd. Then on the 11th, there was a group of 11 hunters who went out. Then 5 days later, on the 16th, there were what they called the ox teams, and there were 70 men composing the Ox teams. Then they went. And then on August the 25th, 107 people with Brigham Young follow behind. So this is quite a large composition of people who are hitting eastbound. The story is so instructive because unlike the very militaristic, efficient operation of the westbound vanguard, those going east, once they got into the mountains, in the absence of Brigham Young to offer any kind of control, it became in many ways a comedy of errors. they became disappointed with one another. The Ox teams had trouble with the hunters. Some stormed off by themselves only to encounter Indians, and so they quickly ran back and ate humble pie and joined with the group. It was The group coming to Utah in 1847 is sort of interesting. The group going back to winter quarters is really interesting because of the many of the difficulties that they had. And but they finally all got back. The first group enter winter quarters on the 21st of October. Brigham Young gets there at the end of the month. The only casualties in all of this are animals. Wow. And one of Brigham Young's horses, and interestingly, one of my great-great-grandfather's horses that ended up being a real problem for him as he went back to winter quarters. On the 29th of August, they first encounter Parley P. Pratt's group. Mm-hmm. And there's so much fractious nonsense going on that one of the men starts to tell Parley P. Pratt's group, gives him very bad impressions of Salt Lake Valley, which really made the rest of them who liked the Salt Lake Valley angry at this guy. It was really silly. A couple of days later, they encounter John Taylor's groups. We're talking 1,500 plus just in Parley P. Pratt's group. So this remarkable story became something that we'll never forget. This is not a footnote. It's one of the most important things that ever happened to the Saints for their successful emigration to the Great Salt Lake Valley, their return to try to make the way for those who would follow them. And somebody who will appear on the program a little later on, Mel Bayshore has narrowed this group down to less than 60,000 people. We'd talked in terms of 70 or 80,000, and Mel's expertise on and trying to actually identify the numbers of immigrants, I think, help us to narrow this down a bit. Despite that fact, this 60,000 group of number of people who came before the railway was finally extended to the Great Basin in 1869, really becomes one of the great moments of Mormonism, protracted as it was, and something that we truly will always remember.
Well, thank you, Ron Barney. And as we now have gotten them into the Salt Lake Valley and then out of the Salt Lake Valley back to get the rest, we romanticize, and rightfully so, that great vanguard company because they were truly the pioneers and entering into the Salt Lake Valley. But that really wasn't the end of the process. It was really just the beginning for years to come. And we look forward to talking more about the crossing of the Pioneer Trail. We hope that you listeners will join us again for another program on Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel as we discuss the people, places, events, and key issues associated with the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.